right. Good morning. Here we are again. I don't know about you guys. I really like I love the hymns. I kind of grew up in them. And kind of more of a conservative church. And beside our English hymnal, we actually had a German hymnal right beside it. And every Sunday, we'd pick up the German hymnal and sing at least one German song along with all the English hymns as well. The one thing I really love about the hymns is that the last verse, more often than not, is singing about heaven, you know, about our final stop. And I don't know if any of the songs this morning did, but so many of the hymns, they end up, you know, singing about heaven in the final verse. And so you have to sing the first verse because it's always the most familiar one. And the middle verses, you pick out any number of combination of those ones. But you have to sing the last verse. You have to sing that verse because it's the best verse out of all of them. And it's kind of what we've been talking about in, this series, Living in the Light of Another Reality, and living in the light of this eternity and this promise for a glorious future that God has given us. And that we've been reading about in this passage. And let's read through this passage again. We've gone through it a few times already, but let's read it together. It says, "Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. But this seen world, this physical world before us, we've been talking about how it has this tendency to just pull us down and envelop us. And it's like gravity, you know, gravity's pull on our body. Pulls us down towards this world, this physical world, just pulls us into it. And how easily this physical world just takes all of our energy, our focus, our passions, and how it can be so easy to just let our spiritual well-being, let our focus on God slip, and let our focus be on the things of this world. And so the first week, if you remember, this was a long time ago, so if you don't remember, I forgive you, but week one was we talked about that first verse, the outward decay and inward renewal, this idea that our bodies are getting older, and we're not getting younger. And that applies to me and everyone else. That applies to the young boys sitting in the back there, that, you know what, they're getting older, you know. Their bodies still are getting stronger, and they're growing, but they're going to hit this point where they suddenly, the uphill, everything goes up, must come down, right? And it's inevitable, right? But at the same time, there's something else that's at work with in us as believers, that there's a spiritual renewal, and as we look to God and as we behold Him and reflect Him, that there's something that changes within us, and there's something that's daily renewed, that's always being renewed. And our bodies are going downhill, but our spirits, our interiors are being renewed. And they've got what we've talked about last week. The end line, the finish, is glorious. This Hollywood ending, this perfectly scripted Hollywood ending, is real and is coming. And it's written about in the book of Revelations. And we can't perhaps expect that Hollywood ending anytime before that, you know, in this world. We talk about our troubles, and Paul calls them light troubles, and not that he didn't have many troubles or issues that he faced in his life, but in comparison to what he saw coming in the end, they were easy. Well, they were light and momentary in comparison. Amen? And I know we've already listed a number of things we're praying for, that, you know, things that aren't light, things that aren't easy, that we're walking through. But this eternity that God has prepared for us is something that's so far beyond comparison anything we'll go through in this life. And not only that, but God Himself is so much bigger and so much greater than anything we can anything we'll face in this life. And we don't want to lose sight of that. We don't want to lose sight of Him, even though even though there's a lot of things clouding him out. So that brings us to this week, which is kind of an extension from the last week and taking it a little further. And the question, this is a tough question. And the question I have here is, what is the meaning of the trials that we face? Is there a purpose for what we're going through? And man, I could share my thoughts, but my thoughts don't mean a whole lot. And I want to go to the scriptures and see what the scriptures say about some of these things that we're going through. And this is a really tough question to ask. And it's a question that it's one of the toughest questions that anyone's asked in this world. And you know, even in the secular world, they ask this question, why do good things or why do bad things happen to good people, right? Oof. And there's books, you know, there's books, like libraries full of books written on this topic alone, and trying to come to some meaning, some understanding of what this, you know, what, why do we go through these things that we go through? Anyone ever wonder that? Yeah, I can't guarantee we're going to come up with all the answers. We won't come up with all the answers. We may not come up with very many answers at all this morning. But we want to look to the scriptures and see what they have to say about this. And you know, when we're going through stuff, we want to know that at least what we're going through has some meaning to it. You know, you don't want to do something that's totally meaningless. I don't know if you've ever been instructed to dig a hole and pile the dirt somewhere else, and then you've been instructed to take that dirt and fill the hole back up again, or anything like that. You probably haven't been, but you get the sense that, you know, when we're doing something, we want to know that this is accomplishing something, that this is going somewhere. This is not just meaningless running in circles like a dog chasing his tail. I don't know if you guys have watched the movie The Karate Kid, not the new one that came out a couple years ago, but like the, you know, the original one that came out in the, what, a 60s, 70s or 80s. Anyways, there's this young kid named Daniel, and he's got this desire to learn to practice karate. He wants to learn how to do karate. And then there's this older gentleman, Mr. Miyagi, who's his mentor. And towards the beginning of this movie, there's a scene where Daniel, the boy, comes to Mr. Miyagi, and Mr. Miyagi promises, I'm going to teach you everything I know about this, but you've got to do something. You have to promise that you're going to do everything that I do without asking questions, that you're going to obey me no matter what I say. And Daniel's so eager to learn, he says, yes, I'll do that, and they shake. So the first thing Mr. Miyagi does is he reaches down for a bucket of water and a sponge, and he places this wet sponge in his hand, and he says, wash my cars, and then wax. And then you get, you know, this wax on thing. He shows him how to wax, wax on, wax off. And so he goes at this task. He's supposedly supposed to be learning how to practice karate, but here he is, he's washing his cars. And after that task, Mr. Miyagi has a whole list of chores he's doing. He sands a wooden floor down. He refinishes a fence for Mr. Miyagi. He paints his house. And this boy is wondering, what am I doing? What did I get myself into here? Here's this blind obedience to this guy. I'm supposed to be learning karate, and he's made me his personal slave. And he's wondering, what is the meaning of all this that we're going? What is this? I didn't sign up for this. And at that point of despair, then Mr. Miyagi pulls him aside and he says, and he starts to show him some of the different moves he's been learning, which are actually, you know, very similar to some karate moves. And he's been learning these things through muscle memory as he's waxing on and waxing off and all this stuff. But all the time, he's been learning some very basic foundational stuff. And in that moment, he sees it all coming together as he practices some of these moves, and he suddenly realizes that all this time, this has actually served a purpose for something. And what was meaningless and useless actually has a meaning and purpose. You with me? I don't know if you guys have seen that movie or not, but it's a good one. So, I don't know. Sometimes we feel, what is the meaning of what I'm going through? What is the purpose of this? And I think as we come through some scriptures, we'll hopefully be able to find maybe even just an ounce of meaning and hope in the midst of some of these really, really dark times. And so just going back to this verse, for a light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that outweighs them all. And so last time we kind of pulled this verse apart. And you know, on the one side, the present, we've got these light, what Paul calls light and momentary troubles. And on the other side, we've got the eternal glory that far outweighs them all. And this the the verb in there, the word achieving for us, can also be translated as preparing or working towards something. There's a sense of a motion, of something going. We're moving towards something. And of course, what we're moving towards here is eternity. And Paul is showing us that is our finish line. That is the goal. That is what we're working towards. That is what God is working towards. And when we come to that understanding that it's not about coming to a comfortable and good place in this life, but it's actually about moving towards eternity and coming towards that goal, that maybe our mindset begins to change a little bit. And when we realize that this life is simply a process, and it's a pathway to eternity, that we're on this road, that it's not like we're trying to earn our way to heaven there. That is done. That is finished. But we're on this pathway. We're not there yet. We haven't arrived to that place. And God has us in this process of transformation, of changing, of bringing us to this place. And there was a quote talking about, you know, this verse and what it means. And this he says, these troubles that we face, they are a means of weaning our hearts from this world and drawing out our desires, hopes, and expectation of another, of letting go of this world and just grabbing a hold of the one that is to come. And that's the final goal. That is the plan. That is what God has for us. That is his finish line. That's it. And it's a glorious one, as we talked about last time. It's something that's so wonderful. So in the meantime, we're stuck on this road. We're in this journey, you know, like Bob and Becky are making their way through Central America all the way to Panama. That's a long trip, and there's a lot of uncertainties, and there's, you know, a lot of questions and a lot of things, even down to trying to find a hotel, you know, for where they can keep their dogs with them. All these different things. There's a whole lot of dangers too. A lot of questions as you go from border to border, and I get scared sometimes just crossing into the States. You know, these border agents, they make you feel guilty even though you've done nothing wrong. I don't know if you've ever felt that. And I've sometimes had the worst crossing experiences going into my own country, Canada. It's like they don't want me to come back home. And yeah, Heather is agreeing with that. And so, I mean, imagine going into these other, you know, countries where you don't speak the language. It's not your first language anyways. And, you know, there's a lot of uncertainties. So let's go into this. And I think the first thing that we can see, and Paul points us to this, is that there is a change that happens vertically between us and God. That the trials, the things we go through, they can help us change our focus upward. And I want to look at 2 Corinthians 1, verse 8 and 9. We read this verse last week, and we're going to read the next part of this verse. But it says, "We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about the trials, the troubles we experienced in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt we had received the sentence of death." And so Paul, we know, we talked about this last week, Paul had been through a whole list of trials in his life, things that he had to endure, and it was a long list. Beaten and lashed and shipwrecked and all these different things that he had gone through, a whole list of stuff that a lot of us will probably never experience. But he's still able to come to this point. And his conclusion in all of that is this: "But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead." You see that kind of play on words there. "Indeed, we felt we had received the sentence of death." We felt like we were going to die. This is it. I'm done. I can't. I got no more control here. But God, we turn to God. We put our trust in him. We relied on him because he raises the dead. Because he is the God who can raise the dead. He's the God who is bigger than anything we face, than anything we can face. And so there's a sense where these trials, these things we go through, kind of attack us in our comfort zones. Maybe we should call them control zones, because that's kind of what they are, really. They're places where we got everything in order, where we're all good. As Paul's ship, as Paul's floating in the middle of the ocean there on another shipwreck, I think he's feeling anything but in control. And this is something, I don't know if any of you like to feel out of control. I don't. I remember in winter one time in southern Manitoba, and this was kind of in late fall when, you know, it's one of these storms where it starts to rain and then everything freezes and everything ices over, and I'm driving home in my car and I come to this big curve and I'm going far too fast and I'm coming around the curve and then it curves back and the car just keeps curving and curving and it just kind of goes graciously into the ditch. And it hits a signpost, just one of these little, you know, 2x2 wood post signposts. But it always happens so slow. You can just kind of feel it all happening. You can see it unfolding, and there's not a thing you can do about it. You're just completely out of control. I have no control where this car is going to go. I've lost control. I've got no control. And there's such a helpless, obviously, such a helpless feeling. And I don't know why God likes to put us in those places, but he seems to, he does. And I remember the first time that I guess 6 years ago, that I led worship here at this church here. I remember driving the road coming to this church that first morning. I was just scared out of my mind. I don't know why. It's not like you people are that scary or anything, but you're wonderful. But I was scared out of my mind for whatever reason. It was something very new. It was something that I did not feel in control. This was not part of my comfort zone bubble here. But God shoved me into that air, into that place, and he was there, and he carried me through. And you know, as time went on, it became easier and easier. And then he asked me. Then he figured he'd put me up here to preach. That was a whole nother ball game. And but God seems to put us into these places. And whether it's, you know, things he calls us to do, or whether it's difficult situations, whether it's even just trials or tragedies that happen to our life, he puts us in these really difficult places. And we have to try and figure out, what are we supposed to do with them? What do we do in this place? And I think what they really help us do is they help bring ourselves into perspective. Who am I really? You know, to think that I'm in control all the time. You know, to think that I should be into control and I want to be in control. I'm really wanting to be God, am I? I want to have the say in everything. I want to have things this way. I want to have things just like this. And I'm really, in some sense, I'm exalting myself to a place that I shouldn't be. And I'm almost writing God out of the picture sometimes. And that is not a healthy place to be, is it? But it's a place that a part of us kind of goes to. There's a part of our nature that wants to be in that place. We want to be in control. And so they help us, they remind us that we aren't God. And I wrote here, they write our creator-creation relationship with God. They remind us, God is the one. They can help us remind us, God is the one who is in control. Or at least they remind us that we aren't. Man, we are not in control. And we are helpless. Sometimes we are helpless. But God, you are the one who is in control. Another thing that can happen, we talk about, you know, the vertical of writing this relationship, writing our understanding of this relationship. Another thing, an internal change, something that happens within us. And they can help shape our character. James 1 verse 2 to 4 talks about this. And it says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." Boy, once again, equating pure joy with trials of many kinds. How does that sound? How does that work? How do you come to that conclusion? You know, you wonder, what is James thinking here? Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. You know, what do you look forward to? What do you really look forward to? Maybe you look forward to, you know, a lot of us live far away from our families, and we look, you know, like Howard shared, I'm sure he looked forward to spending time with his parents. He looked forward to spending a month out there with them. We look forward to maybe seeing our families. We look forward to all kinds of different things. You know, as a kid, you look forward to Christmas Day. You couldn't wait for it. Now think about it. Consider it pure joy. Imagine if you couldn't wait for the next trial to come. You know, and that's kind of what James is getting. I can't wait for the next thing. You know, the next time I feel out of control. You know, we think the guy's crazy, you know. But he sees something. He recognizes something at work in the trials that we face. So let's just kind of, let's pull this verse apart here and let's start with the word faith. And faith, you know, if you think about how do you define faith? And think of Hebrews 11 verse 1. And I think a lot of us know that verse. It says, "Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see." Faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of something we don't see. It sounds a lot like what Paul is saying, you know, fixing our eyes not on the seen but on the unseen. And so faith is holding on to the intangible, something that we can't touch, something that we don't have right now, but we're hoping for this, we're waiting for this. We know it's coming. It's not here yet. It's coming. And there was a lot of things Paul could see, tangible things, you know, as he's floating out in sea, he could see that he's out of control. He could see that he's experienced a shipwreck. He could see that, you know, he might die. These are all very tangible things. But the intangible is holding on to something that we don't quite see yet. We don't see. Maybe it's even holding on to God's character and his goodness in the midst of darkness, in the midst when he seems to have abandoned us or left us. It's holding on to that. So faith. Now testing your faith, the testing of your faith. And it seems to suggest that perhaps God allows some of these things to happen, different things that will test our faith. You know, these things we hold on to, he will allow things to come in and maybe cloud out that, maybe cloud out our certainty. He'll allow things to maybe test our resolution. Do we really believe God? Do we really believe he says who he is? Do we really believe these words that are in the Bible? Do we really believe this? Do we really believe that he is good and he is faithful? And these things are almost like, yeah, he calls them a testing of your faith. He calls them tests. It's where the rubber meets the road. You know, we can say, I believe this, but until we're actually put in a situation where we are tested on what we believe, what happens? Who are we really, you know? And the Israelites were such an example of this. The Israelites, as they left Egypt, they were continually put into difficult situations and they continually had to trust God. Imagine coming up to the Red Sea. Here, they are at the mercy of Moses, who is at the mercy of God's leading them through this wilderness. Here, the Egyptians are behind them, chasing them down. Here, they come up to the Red Sea. What are we going to do now? Wow, Moses, you let us down. God, what is going on here? And of course, you know, we know how this ends up. They walk through the Red Sea. God parts the waters. Imagine the faith that must have taken, you know, coming up to the Red Sea, knowing the Egyptians are behind them, and then stepping into those waters and walking through them, and knowing that the Egyptians are behind you. Imagine the faith that must have taken. And God continually led them through 40 years of different trials and different things. And you know, there was a much quicker, easier way that they could have gone to the promised land. That they estimate, you know, if they'd gone directly, they could have gotten there in 40 days. Yet God took them through this winding road, through the long way around, through the Red Sea. They didn't need to cross the Red Sea, but God took them that way. Because God was shaping them and molding them and changing them and testing them and bringing them to a place, the place where they were ready to come into the promised land. And you know, I wonder, couldn't we just sit in class and learn about these things? Couldn't we just come here Sunday mornings and we'll be instructed on, you know, what the word says? Good, got that. You know, we can write a written exam on the way out. Passed, done. All right, we don't need to go through the practicum. But God seems to like these practicums. He likes to take us through these experiences where we're put to the test. The next part here, the testing of your faith, what does it do? It develops perseverance. That word is also translated in some versions as patience. It develops patience within us. And sometimes I think my prayers are often, God, I need answers. I need this. I need this fixed right now. I need you to come and do this right now. God, I need this. I need this fixed. Sometimes God's, I don't know, his answers delay, or he has a different answer in mind. He doesn't seem to work on my timetable, it seems often. But it goes from, God, I need these answers, I want this fixed now, to, God, I will continue to trust you even so, even in the midst of this. And so there's a sense as we go through these, go through something difficult, we become stronger. And, you know, our faith, of course, is like a muscle in a lot of ways. And I don't know if any of you like working out or anything like that. But, you know, we could you could get up every morning and do 5 push-ups every morning. And great, you could. That'd be wonderful. But if you kept doing 5 push-ups every morning, you're not going to be growing any stronger. Your body might be growing a little bit in the beginning to be able to do those 5 push-ups if maybe one is a challenge for you right now. But if you just keep doing those 5 push-ups, that's all you're going to be able to do. If the next day you try to do 7 or 8, you probably won't be able to. But as you do 5 push-ups one day, you do the 6 the next day, you keep going, you keep growing, and eventually you're going to be able to do, I don't know how many. You could do a lot more. But, you know, your muscles, you need to take them to the point of where your muscles are actually kind of ripped apart. You know, they're actually broken. They're actually broken down so your body can come in and repair your muscles. And what it'll do is it's going to make it stronger. It's going to make it stronger. But you have to push yourself to that point. You have to be pushed to that point in order for that to happen. And this is, I think James is talking about the same kind of thing, about pushing us to this point where, you know, our faith is just stretched to the limit. And then our faith grows, it becomes stronger. And then, you know, something bigger comes, and our faith is pushed even more. And it becomes stronger and stronger. And the last part, be mature and complete. So the testing of faith develops perseverance so that we will come to this place of being mature and complete, not lacking anything. So the end game here, James is talking about, is a place of maturity. And you might be scratching your heads and thinking, wait a second, aren't we already, am I already there? You know, I'm pretty good, I'm there. I wish we could say we were there already. I wish we could say we've arrived, we've learned everything we need to learn, but we, you know, the truth is we haven't, we aren't there. And God is wanting to bring us there. He's wanting to reflect himself in us, his perfect self, his perfect character. He's wanting to reflect that within us. And we, unfortunately, we fall short in so many ways. And I pray to God that for myself, I'm growing in this, that my faith is becoming stronger, and that my character is more and more reflecting him. And I know that some days it doesn't, and some days I fall short of that. But I pray that, you know, in this journey, that my character more and more is reflecting him. So we have this vertical change, this vertical realignment. We have this internal transformation, this internal change, and the other thing, the last thing, is they can help us help others. They can help us encourage those around us. And Paul talks about this right at the beginning of 2 Corinthians, and Howard alluded to this verse this morning. And it says, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles." You know, you think of eagles learning to fly, and I kind of researched this a little bit, and it's actually not really true from the best that I can research this. I didn't actually go out and observe some eagles from their birth too, but as best I could understand from the internet, which is always, you can find almost anything you want, but eagles, when they learn to, mostly eagles will get out on their own will, and they'll learn to fly. But, you know, we often have these pictures you see in cartoons about this eaglet who doesn't want to learn to fly, and so the mother comes and pushes him out of the nest, and, you know, he tumbles to his demise, or he learns to fly, right? And I'm just, praise be to God that we don't have a God who is like that. He just, you know, gives us a kick and watches us flail and fall. He is not a God like that. He is the God of all comfort. He's the God of all encouragement. He's the God who comes alongside us in our troubles. And he doesn't leave us. He doesn't abandon us. And the answer to that, you know, why? Paul answers, so that we can comfort those in any troubles with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. So there's something that happens here, and it kind of follows this progression that we're talking about, I think. I think there's a natural progression here, in that first, that we need to have this realignment. We need to get a right perception of who we are and who God is and who we are in relation to God. And as we do that, and as we allow God to shape and mold us and strengthen us, and as we work through these things, that we can be an encouragement and we can be a comfort to other people who are going through these things, going through things as well. Some of the hardest, the hardest things I've learned, or the biggest things I've learned have come through some of the hardest struggles I've faced, or things I've gone through, some of those darkest times. Or, you know, when I came here and I had to lead worship that first time, and I felt quite like Paul, like I was under the sentence of death. But as we face those really tough times, God really shows himself as faithful, and he carries us through those times. And as God shapes and molds us during those times, we learn something that I don't think we can learn in other ways. And we can take those, and we can help, we can encourage other people as they go through difficult times too. The things we learn in these painful experiences can be encouragement to other people. And the reality is that there's no one who can encourage someone in something like a person who's gone through that too, who's gone through that as well. When we've gone through, you know, when we've experienced something really deep and painful in our lives and God has carried us through, we can be an encouragement to someone else. So there's a sense that God is, or Paul is talking here about a sense of community, that we are not alone, that first of all, we have a God of all comfort, a God who is there to walk through these things with us. But not only that, we have each other as a body of believers. You know, we can go to each other to work, to care, to be encouraged through these things. We can look to someone else who's gone through something, and we can see, wow, how can they have hope? How can they have hope coming through something like this? And so these different things are things that can happen. And I think I just want to just quickly mention this. I in each one of those headings, I said, you know, these are things that can happen. And the reality is that these aren't necessarily the place that we're going to come to. And sometimes we, you know, some of these very real and natural response to some of these things that we face are things like emotions like anger and bitterness and self-pity. And these are some very real, real things that we need to work through and deal with. But God is calling us to work through these things, not to just pretend like they don't exist, but to work through these things and to come to this place where we recognize him as God, as our creator. And I wish I could say here and say, you know, we've got the answer to all these things, and, you know, we're going to understand. Ah, now I know why I'm going through this. You know what? There will be a lot of times when we still will not have any understanding. We'll be like that kid Daniel learning, you know, waxing on, waxing off, and wondering, what is this? What is happening in my life? And, of course, you know, Isaiah 55, verse 8 and 9 says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, and neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." There's a lot of things that we are just never, ever going to understand in this world. You know, I think there's times when God does, you know, show us things and maybe helps us understand, and then there's times when we just won't. And, of course, you know, Proverbs 3, verse 5, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. It's not trust in the Lord with all your heart because you now understand. It's in spite of not understanding, we trust God. And Glenn shared about this a couple of weeks ago, about we've got to just trust God. We've got to just trust God. And I think I often find comfort in this verse, Romans 8, verse 28. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him. And the reality is that I think we sometimes get this word good mixed up. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him. Or we have a different understanding of what good is than our understanding of good is maybe doesn't line up with God's understanding of good. You know, what we think would be good would be that God would answer this right now. He would come and answer this prayer in this way right now. This is what I want. This would be good, Lord. This is it. But God has something, maybe sometimes He has something different in mind. And I believe that it goes back to this verse that we're talking about this morning. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory. Going back to that finish line, understanding that this is the finish line that God is working towards. This is the ultimate good that He is working towards. This is the goal. And everything in our lives is working towards that end. And God is bringing us in this process of transformation. And maybe sometimes that is. You know, we wish that God's agenda would be different than our agenda. But we know that He is good. And that He has things in control. And He knows what He's doing. And so I guess the question is, what do we do with this? How do we do this? How do we make this happen in our lives? And I think there's a few things, and maybe you can just even take one of these things this week and just go home with one of these points and allow God to just work this in your life. And the first one is allow God to be bigger than anything that we face. And we talked a lot about this last week. Just let God be God. Let him be huge. Let Him be bigger than anything that we encounter, whether it's something He's calling us to that we're afraid of, or whether it's just something really difficult to understand that's going on. Allow your faith and trust in Him to grow. And even looking forward, you know that these difficult times, some of these trials and things, that we're going to see our relationship with Him grow in ways that it couldn't other ways. And even just valuing that and treasuring that, you know, as a result of some of this stuff, God, oh, let my relationship with You just grow. Let my faith in You grow, Father. Allow Him to shape and mold our character so that we can reflect Him. Allow Him to just change those things within us that need to be changed. And we can help carry each other through this process. You know, as we are all on this road together and we're all kind of, you know, heading towards the same end, we can carry the people around with us, encourage those around us. And then, last but not least, let's remember that it's not about this life, but it's about this eternity, this beautiful, wonderful eternity that's coming. And let's be excited about that. As Paul was in so many places, he was so excited about leaving this world behind, and he couldn't wait to be with his Lord and be with his Savior. And to just hold on to that as our goal and our end and the finish line. I hope. I know we don't have. I don't know if we have any more answers this morning, but I hope that God does become that every day God becomes bigger in our lives, and that He just reveals Himself to us, and that we're just open to that and open to Him to do, you know, whatever it is He wants to accomplish in our lives. And I wish, you know, I could stand up here and say that as followers and believers that He's going to bless our lives and everything is going to turn out, you know, good in the way we want it to. And it won't. You know, we can't find that anywhere in the scriptures. I think we find lots of places where God does bless and He loves to do wonderful things for us. But He's working towards something far beyond this life. That this life is just, it's a process. It's a pathway. We're just moving on to eternity. We're getting ready for there. And yeah, this isn't our home, this isn't our final place. And we want to take communion this morning, and we want to move towards that. We want to remember Christ and what he did. And I'll invite the servers to come up and